We are in the great season of Lent, but we have only just begun the season, and so this time is the time to build up momentum. It's not that easy to change. It's hard enough to change a schedule, but to change a deeply rooted habit, it's not that easy. You can't just say, well, from now on, I'm not going to do what I've done all year. So that's what the church recognizes, and we have these days after Ash Wednesday to help us get started. Ash Wednesday, of course, was the great launching day, and we were instructed in the tripod of disciplines, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. But yesterday we were told, well, even before you can do prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, you have to decide to follow Jesus. And Jesus himself said what it will involve. If you want to be my disciple, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Which is pretty serious business. Well, today we honor two saints who show us with their own lives how serious this business of following Jesus is. I'm talking about Perpetua and Felicity. Their martyrdom has inspired the church since it happened, which was way back in the year 203, so early church. And it took place in North Africa in the city of Carthage. I don't know much about Carthage, but I know what Carthage is, what St. Augustine says about it. St. Augustine was from that region of North Africa, and he lived about 100, 150 years later. And he says that when he went to Carthage, it was a cauldron of vices, and he jumped right in. So that was St. Augustine. I don't know what it was like in the time of Perpetua and Felicity, but it was certainly a time of severe persecution of Christians. Carthage at that time was an outpost of the Roman Empire, and Rome, as you know, was hostile to Christianity for the first three centuries in varying waves of severity. But in the time of Perpetua and Felicity, it was a severe wave. And when they converted to Christianity, they knew that was a very real possibility that they would be killed for it, which brings to us the awareness that this idea of following Jesus is not just a nice idea, not just a popular trend. It's laying your life on the line. Now, we're not at risk of being martyred at this stage and in this place, but in the history of the church, that's very often what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. Well, Perpetua, who was an educated woman and knew how to read and write, that she kept some notes. She had a diary, at least that's the tradition. And she was a nursing mother, 22 years old, nursing mother. It makes sense to us that her main concern was not about what was going to happen to her, but what was going to happen to her baby. I don't know what happened to the baby. I haven't seen any mention of the baby. She records that she was allowed to keep her baby with her while she was in prison. So it's unimaginable to think that what she was going through and recognizing what fidelity to Jesus would mean. Her, it says her maid, but really she probably was a slave, was a Felicity, and she was an expectant mother. I don't know where the husbands of these two women went. I don't know if they tried to defend them or if they weren't even Christians, I don't know. But all we know is that these two women, along with a group of others, were, because they refused to turn away from the faith, they were martyred. Why were they in this position? Because in those days, the religion you followed was evidence of the faithfulness to the nationality, to the country. It wasn't just heresy to follow the wrong gods, it was treason. It was betraying your country. So anyway, they followed the wrong gods in the eyes of the Romans. And they were thrown to wild beasts, apparently leopards. And then when they didn't die from the animals, they were executed, they were beheaded. Well, it's quite a stirring example to set before our eyes as we begin the journey of Lent. following Jesus means following him all the way. Now, Jesus himself said, I'm going to suffer and die and rise again. So don't forget, the journey doesn't end with being martyred. It ends with eternal glory. Lent is not just for its own sake. Lent is a preparation for Easter. Dying leads to rising, death to resurrection, the cross to glory. That's how it works. So, but at this stage, in the very beginning of Lent, we're picking up the cross. Part of the discipline of Lent is fasting, and fasting is the central theme of today's readings. The disciples of John asked Jesus the question, why do we and the Pharisees fast much, but your disciples do not fast? Two extremes. They fast much, and your disciples don't seem to fast at all. We know this contrast existed between not only the disciples of John and Jesus, but between John and Jesus themselves. And Jesus said, when you saw John, you thought he was a madman because he didn't eat or drink. And then when the Son of Man came, Jesus, and he ate and drank, well, then you called him a glutton and a drunkard. So between John and Jesus, there was this contrast. But here, the disciples of John, at least in Matthew's gospel, are fasting much because John is in prison. Remember, in Matthew's gospel, John is arrested before Jesus starts his public ministry. So at this time, John is in prison, and probably their fasting has to do with that contradiction. The prophet sent by God is in prison. Fasting was an expression of mourning, but also a petition, a way of petitioning, sacrifice. Fasting is also an expression of repentance. So perhaps they were making acts of penitence for the sake of the nation, because this terrible crime of arresting and imprisoning John. So John himself was a very ascetical man. He lived on grasshoppers and wild honey. He was fasting all the time. But Jesus was not. And this was puzzling to them. If you're a religious person, and if you know that there is sin in the world, and you know that injustice is being done against God's prophet, and you know that this is what religious people do, why don't your disciples get with the program? Why don't they follow the same? And Jesus' response is very profound. He says, can the wedding guests mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? He often answers a question with a question. Well, this is the question. Do you mourn at a wedding reception? No, you don't. Very obvious answer. No, you can't mourn when you're celebrating. It would be inappropriate. It would be offensive. But then he says, the time will come when the bridegroom is taken away. Then they will fast. He's talking about his presence with them, as if they're at the wedding reception, and his absence when Jesus is taken away. Now, this gives us an opportunity to reflect on our own practice of fasting. Actually, the first reading has a very good description of how to fast and how not to fast. It's a passage from the prophet Isaiah. Fasting, simply not eating, is of no great value to God or to us. That's just a superficial difference. And he says, if your fasting is making you, I'm talking about Isaiah here, if your fasting is making you a nasty person, well then, there's something wrong with the way you're fasting. If your fasting makes you impatient and intolerant and demanding, well then, better not to fast at all. Or, even better, express your desire to fast by taking care of those in need. This is what Isaiah says. This is the fasting that I wish, releasing those bound unjustly, untying the thongs of the yoke, like John the Baptist was bound unjustly, setting free the oppressed, breaking every yoke, sharing your bread with the hungry. That was part of what we observed on Ash Wednesday when the bishop said, support the effort to feed the malnourished children, sharing your bread with the hungry, sheltering the oppressed and the homeless, clothing the naked. These are the works of mercy, corporal works of mercy. So fasting and almsgiving go together. self-denial and care for those in need go together. And if they don't, there's something wrong. And especially if our fasting leads to our being oppressive to others, there's something really wrong. But let's reflect for a moment here about this idea of the bridegroom with us or the bridegroom not with us. Of course the bridegroom is with us. Jesus is with us. He even said, I'm with you always until the end of the age. So we might say, well, then that means you never have to fast at all. No, no. Part of our fasting is to be faithful to the presence of the bridegroom. Part of our fasting is to cut into what gets in the way of our relationship with the bridegroom. That's why fasting is more than just not eating. It's disciplining of the disorders in our life, or the tendency to make less important things more important. But we need fasting. We definitely need it. The idea of Jesus being with us or not with us, anything that strengthens our relationship with the bridegroom is worthwhile, and anything that gets in the way of our relationship with the bridegroom has to be eliminated. That's a way of evaluating our fasting. We're still very early in Lent, and perhaps your Lenten program is still not fully decided. Well, choose things that strengthen your love for the bridegroom, that make you a better bride, not things that make you proud or impress other people or irritable. Do things that will cooperate with grace. And fasting actually does work this way if you do it right. Because when we're fasting, we realize what we're really hungering for, what we really need. And we realize our dependence on God. You know, take away one meal and we're left weakened. How humbling that is. So, okay. So pick up the Lenten disciplines. Fasting is one of them, but do it in a way that is an expression of love for the bridegroom, but also love for the rest of the bride, the church. And participate in the life of the church. We're all the bride, and we're on this journey together. So we express our repentance, our desire for conversion, we express our love for God and for His people, and then we'll have a good Lent.